everyone. My name is Patrick LeBlanc, your host, and welcome to Insights Tomorrow, brought to you by Microsoft. Let's deep dive with leaders and innovators in the data space. We're going to explore the challenges, the opportunities that organizations face in their data journeys. In each episode, we will invite some data leaders, experts, and some practitioners who share their unique perspectives on how data transformation is changing their business. Let's explore this data journey together and what it means to you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Insights Tomorrow. I'm your host, Patrick LeBlanc, and today, we have a very, very special guest. I would say he's probably the foremost expert in SQL Server. I don't know anyone that knows more about SQL Server than this guy. Welcome, Mr. Bob Ward.
Oh, Patrick, thank you so much. It's been such a great pleasure being your colleague and friend for so many years. That's a very honoring thing you would say. It's very humbling. I'm not sure there is such a person that exists in the world. There's so many great people that know this product over the years, but it's very kind of you to say that.
All right. Well, Bob, tell us, before we get started, before I hit you with all these questions, tell us, you know, who you are and what you do at Microsoft.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, Patrick. So my official title is Principal Architect, which is just a fancy name for me being here 30 years at Microsoft. So actually, last year I celebrated my 30th anniversary here at the company.
Wow.
But I work within the engineering team itself, and I involve myself in kind of two ways. One is doing actual architect work within the product teams on future versions of our product, especially trying to leverage all my customer experience I've had over the years and my experience just working on the products. And that is edge to cloud now. It's not just SQL Server. So I work on everything that's got the word SQL on it.
Wow.
And then also, you may see me out there, quite frankly, out in the industry at events, blogs, writing books of that nature, kind of getting the word out to the public about the goodness of SQL. And so those are kind of the two roles I do right now. But one thing I love about it is just the amazing innovation we have in the products. And learning all this new stuff all the time has really been a pleasure as part of the job. And I have to do that to do both parts of those jobs. But yeah, architect, officially Azure Data, but really focusing on SQL.
All right. Wow. That's amazing. And congratulations on the 30 years at Microsoft. That's amazing. And so before we, I want to know, I have to ask this question because I think everybody wants to know, how did you get started in data, Bob? What led you down this path?
Well, I date you, sir. So it started in college. I had a computer science degree from Baylor University graduated in 86. Right out of college, working for a defense contractor, I started working on C programming. Yes, like I was the first person in my entire department that learned what C was all about. Wow. And I was writing C code. This is crazy, against a mainframe database. Wow. So I started getting an affinity to working for databases. And then in my next job, I went right to work for Ingres. You've heard of Ingres, Patrick?
I have
it's
not.
It's the predecessor to Postgres.
Oh, okay.
So I worked on the predecessor of Postgres called Ingres. I also worked on Oracle. And then I started getting an affinity for Unix, C++, those kind of database products. So early on, it was all for me about being a developer working for database products. And I got a great affinity back then for doing it.
Okay. So you're doing all this fancy C coding, right? I did. But how did that lead you to SQL Server and Microsoft? How did you go from, you know, this developer background and to working at Microsoft and focusing purely on SQL Server?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I would say one of the things I was doing in my job in those times was doing some traveling, and I found out I was going to have my first child. So I wanted to stop traveling. And I was also working a lot of hours as a developer on these really high-profile projects. So I wanted to kind of take a different spin. And a friend of my wife's said, hey, I work for Microsoft. They're looking for people that know databases. You know Oracle pretty well. I'm like, yeah. Well, they're looking for people that do technical support. I'm like, I don't know about that. I don't know anything about that. But I interviewed with Microsoft. I got an affinity for what they were doing with SQL Server. And they were very interested in me because I had this programming debugging knowledge. We think we could marry those together quite well. And they said, this is so funny in my interview, by the way, you'll have access to the source code. I'm like, what?
Wow.
So that really intrigued me that I could all of a sudden now look at an actual product like SQL. It was back in OS2 in those days, even on early days on NT. But I would have access to see how the product works internally. So that really interests me. But I got my teeth on technical support, right? which is why, Patrick, you over the years have seen me do all these internals and troubleshooting presentations and so forth. So, so early on those years, it was all about trying to help customers debug and solve the toughest problems on SQL in the world. But that's how I got started.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I know some of the same people you know. I know that.
Yeah, for sure.
I know that you used to work in Dallas with a particular guy in a cube. I know this for a fact. And so he wanted me to ask you this question. I have to ask you this question, Bob. I have to ask you this question. So explain to me. So you worked in support. You worked in support.
I did.
And so explain to me what it was like to actually support customers using a fax machine, right?
That
That seems foreign these days, something that we would take for granted.
So, Patrick, I mean, I met people at Microsoft that were not born when I started, obviously. And so I would tell them that I'm like, hey, do the most with what you can. That's a motto if I have. Do the most with what you can. So back in those days, to do support, all we had was the phone and fax. We had no internet, no email. You couldn't email a customer. You couldn't do a web chat or anything like that. But it really forced us to really hone in to solve these problems quickly, to be able to describe the problem, narrow down the problem very fast with a customer. But back in the day, for SQL, error logs were king. All we had was error logs to go solve problems. So customers would fax us their error logs.
Jeez.
And I became very proficient on maintaining a fax machine. Trust me. The toner, the ink, to make sure it's connected properly. But yeah, if you think about it, in those days, we didn't even know what the internet was. We didn't know what email was. We had internally email at Microsoft. So, but here's the thing, though. I tell folks that are younger in the company, it really forces you to decide, can you do the most with what you have? Even for technologies today, make sure you're efficiently using the most of what you have, because otherwise, you know, you could go on a path of trying to, like, maybe not lazy is not the right word, but just take for granted certain things. And when I see so many people today try to solve problems, they're not connecting with another person in a way to actually narrow down what that is. We were forced to do that back in the day. So yeah, I was a fax machine king in those days.
hey, that's what I heard. I got one more. We'll get back to the serious questions around this long career, but I got one more.
So, it's fun going down memory lane. I like that.
So it's some troubleshooting, right? Explain, you've been doing troubleshooting a long time. So I heard that there was a golf ball involved in some troubleshooting.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Tell me what was special about
it. I don't know who you've been talking to. No, it's just a funny story. So my two brothers in arms, my colleagues, Bob Doerr and Keith Elmore, we worked hand to hand with each other to solve the most complex problems in the world. And I had a problem with my truck. I couldn't solve this knocking noise and this pinging noise on my truck. And Keith Elmore was sitting in the front seat, and he heard this noise. We were driving to lunch, and he opened up this tray, and there was a golf ball sitting in there. Because I had gone to the dealership and everything trying to solve this problem. And I'm like, look, I don't know what I'm going to do with my truck here. Yeah, it just shows you the day that you think you're the smartest guy in the world, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a golf ball that causes your issue. So nowadays, if there's ever a problem, my truck, a noise, I look for the golf ball. Is there a golf ball there?
Okay. All right.
It's a very humbling experience. I don't know who told you that one, man. That's private information.
I can't reveal my source, Bob. I can't reveal my sources.
Yeah, sure.
I can't reveal my sources. Man.
Yeah, it sounds like the other guy in the queue may have been talking to you.
I can't reveal my sources, man. Uh-huh. I can't. Okay. So over this long career, right, you've been 30 years just at Microsoft. We're not talking about pre-Microsoft, right? You've been this 30 years, and you've seen the evolution of data or SQL Server specifically.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting journey. I mean, SQL has been such an amazing product, but early in the days, we're trying to prove ourselves a lot.
Yeah.
And so we got this reputation for being easy to use, easy to manage, graphical interfaces. But we're trying to cut our teeth against Oracle in those days, right? So we're talking about mostly people running on department servers. But that whole genre of client servers was where I lived. And there were servers. There was no virtual machines back then, right? So using actual physical servers was the key of the day. And then the evolution hit, if you think back in that time frame, late 2000s and so forth, was virtual machines. And everybody was saying, like, I'm not going to SQL in a virtual machine. It can't perform well enough.
Yeah.
And then, of course, nowadays, if you run it even on premises, that's the most popular way to run SQL Server in the world is virtual machines.
Yep.
And so then, if you think about this evolution, back in the late 2000s, the cloud came along. And I distinctly remember being at Microsoft, seeing an email from Bill Gates talking about our cloud technologies and specifically Azure. And I'm like, no way somebody's going to run a SQL in the cloud. There's just no way. And then look where we are today now, right?
Yeah,
so if you think about that kind of journey of client server, consolidation with virtual machines, even the evolution of SQL running on Linux containers, but then SQL in the cloud, and then, of course, this just insane craziness of AI now. I mean, I just see, here's the thing that's consistent about SQL. We run, people don't know this, we run some of the most important data in the world. For so many customers, we do it at the smallest level. We know that at the largest level now. So I think that's one thing that's unique about our product. It's been consistently great at doing all those things, but very innovative. I mean, who thought we'd run SQL on Linux, for gosh sakes, right? So that's one thing I've enjoyed also about my job, Patrick, is I've gotten to stay in the forefront of innovation as that journey I just told you. Yeah. Because SQL's been at the forefront of it.
All right. Wow. So speaking of SQL and on-prem, you know, that's where I cut my teeth with getting into this data community. It's SQL Server. I started with SQL Server 2000, maybe even before 2000. But anyway,
yeah.
And so I started a long time, and I would have never imagined SQL Server would be running on the cloud, let alone in a virtual machine, let alone in the cloud. Right? I've never thought about this. What was that transition like? You've seen it. What was that transition like from just talking about SQL Server on-prem to now SQL Server in the cloud or SQL Azure-based databases?
Yeah, so one thing was very easy for me to make that transition and talk to customers is virtual machines. So if you think about SQL Server and an Azure virtual machine, to a SQL person, it looks the same, right? Yeah. It's just you're running SQL Server inside this VM. The slight differences are figuring out storage and networking within the Azure infrastructure and so forth, but that bridge has made it easier to talk about. What gets more difficult is the managed instance and database story, because there's lots of things that are managed for you. And there's different, like just an example, it's really hard for people to get their head around that they don't have access to the file system anymore. They're like, what do you mean I don't have access to the file system anymore? Where do I place these files and databases and stuff? What do you mean I don't have access to do backups anymore? What are you talking about? So here's one thing that I do, Patrick, and I recommend anybody listening to do. Go take Management Studio. And by the way, Management Studio is not dead. It's well and alive.
Yep.
Take Management Studio, connect it to all of those things, and then look at the differences. Managed instance, when you look at Management Studio connected to Azure SQL Managed Instance, it almost looks like a SQL server.
Wow.
What you're going to find, like an Object Explorer, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you're going to find is these nuances, like extended events has to be directed to an Azure storage account or something of that nature.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's been the most difficult thing people have had to wrap their head around is when you go to platform as a service. But there's also some just amazing cool benefits. When I talk to customers and say, look, you don't have to patch anymore, like anything, they're like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, yeah, get out of the patching game. Don't do patching Tuesdays at midnight or something like that, right? So it's been both difficult, but that Azure, the SQL and Azure virtual machine does help that bridge, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah. So you mentioned some of those pain points, right? Going from on-prem to SQL and VM, SQL and Azure SQL. And so I always wanted access to all the knobs. I remember I wrote this little tool that would capture all my perfmon, suck it into a database, and I was using reporting services to, you know, track the performance of my SQL servers. Do you think, you know, going to the cloud has gotten rid of some of those challenges that the DBA face, you know, around performance and making sure their SQL server is up and, you know, ensuring that it's performant at the high level that they want it to?
Yeah, yes and no. So that, you know, if you talk about virtual machine, right, you have complete control inside this virtual machine.
Yeah.
So it's still the same thing, right?
Yeah.
When you talk about this platform as a service, you still have this basic fundamental thing. You run a query, and if it's terrible, it's not going to run well. So, you know, query tuning and query performance are still an art, in my opinion, and still something that's extremely important for people to do. But let's talk about just like the classic case of you having to place files and logs on different drives, right? And putting in different file groups and those kind of type things. In Azure Database, you just don't worry about that anymore. Because what we do is we have a way for you to provision the resources you need and get the IO rates you need and the IO limits you need. You have a way to say, I've got these many cores, I'm on this service tier, this is what Microsoft promises is for my IO performance, and I don't worry about that now.
Mm.
Now, having said that, you still need to go look at, again, some SQL performance things, and especially it's all around query processing, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But even things like memory grants, some of those classic SQL things people deal with, they still exist. And the good news is this. The things like dynamic management views, extended events, that stuff just works the same, Patrick.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Some of those tried and true things that are inside the engine, I teach that in my workshops all the time. Those things in the engine you know and love, they are still there for you.
Gotcha.
And that's one of the things we try to maintain is that same engine consistency across all of this.
Yeah. So, Bob, here at Insights Tomorrow, you know, we do our research about the people that we're interviewing. And so I just got some late-breaking questions over here that I want to kind of inject into this interview, if you don't mind. So I heard,
this is
what I heard, Bob. This is what I heard. And I want you to tell me a little more about this process. So whenever there was like an old case, I'm going back to your support day. So, but this could be now, right? This could be now, because I'm sure people ping you every now and then when they're struggling with, you know, some serious SQL Server problems. And then you, you know, you put your support hat back on. But I heard instead of putting a support hat on, that you used to put a Superman shirt on to get that problem solved.
Who are you talking to? Oh my goodness. You cracking me up, man. I mean, you are talking about some private stuff that no one knows. Oh my gosh.
Can you tell me about this a little bit, Bob?
I will. So back in the day in support, sometimes we'd get these really tough cases that we just couldn't figure out. And all of us couldn't figure it out. And my colleagues, Bob Doerr, Keith Elmore, Adam Saxton, all these different people knew this. So whenever I walked in with a Superman shirt on, they're like, oh, it's going to get solved today. Like, if Bob is wearing Superman shirt, it means he's really serious about solving this problem. And you know what? It worked.
It worked.
Yes, the Superman shirt. And the thing is so funny, we would work on these cubes, right, in the hallway. People would see me walking down the hallway. They'd yell, Bob's got the Superman shirt on today. So yes, oh my gosh, I can't believe you know that story. Wow.
It's the stuff. I'm a good reporter, Bob. I'm a good reporter.
So privately, behind the scenes, when I'm working on a really hard presentation, I can't figure a demo out, I put the Superman shirt on.
Right? And you do a lot of demos. You do a lot of great demos.
I love doing those.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of them. I've witnessed them. You were here in Atlanta. I went up and I set a full day session for you. It was amazing. Blew my mind. I haven't been keeping track of SQL Server. I do Fabric and Power BI these days. So don't get to do much, but we'll talk more about that offline. Okay.
Sure.
Now, so one more thing, and then we'll get back on track here. I have to ask you this. I got another.
Oh my gosh! Here we go.
Yeah. So I heard. They wanted me to quote this one. So how does "we does not equal Bob" fit into this? More specifically, how were you able to get people to work? And this is serious, right? This is serious because I think about this. How did you get people to work together to come to a resolution?
Oh my goodness. Oh, I cannot believe you're coming up. So the funny thing is, eventually I got an office at Microsoft, which actually led to this funny guy in the cube whole thing. But anyways, I got an office and I had this whiteboard. And so on the whiteboard, obviously, like anybody else, I'd write ideas on or phrases or things. So I had this little section of my board that I would call important phrases, little phrases and quotes.
And
so one of them was, "we does not equal Bob." And what that meant was, is that when I was getting together with people to do a project or something, it meant that I was going to try to do as least as amount of possible. I was going to make other people do most of the work and not me. So I got very, very good at influencing people how to do most of the work without me having to do much of the work. And so one time somebody walked in that didn't know me and said, "what is we don't equal Bob?" And I'm like, "oh, that's just a really, phrase to inspire people to do more." And I'm laughing privately going, "no, that means like, how does Bob do the least amount of work as possible?" Man, how did you know that?
I can't reveal my sources.
Reveal your sources.
The one thing that I heard was that, but it did help, right? It helped drive people to learn more and to be more efficient how they work, right? And so,
Patrick, it was all about me trying to inspire people instead of giving them the answer. So like in the early days of support, I was a mentor. People would come to my desk and they would say, "hey, I've got this problem." And what I would say to them, we had something called a knowledge base. I would say, my first question was, "what did you search in the knowledge base for that didn't give you the answer?" Before you even asked me the question.
Yeah.
They're like, "oh, well, I didn't even search for that." I'm like, "go back, search in the knowledge base and come back and say, Bob, I searched this in the knowledge base and it couldn't solve it." So I'm trying to convince them to help themselves before just saying, "hey, here's my question." So I've kind of, Patrick, my personal philosophy in life is to empower others to make a difference in and outside of my life. And so that is an example of me trying to empower others to learn for themselves and grow themselves at the same time, trying to make sure they still get an answer. So eventually it led to me saying, "hey, how critical is this?" Because if a customer is completely down, I might shortcut a few things, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of the "we like well Bob" also really did mean that, me just trying to empower others to do things for themselves.
There you go. We not equal Bob. I like it. Yeah. I like it. Okay. So back to seriousness. So you mentioned AI a couple of times. You talked about AI. But what's top of mind for you right now? Is AI top of mind? Are we still, is on-premises still really important? Or should we just focus on the cloud?
On-premises is so important, Patrick. Okay. I live in all these worlds now, right? And I influence Microsoft at the highest level of our strategy. On-premise SQL Server is still a serious product. SQL Server 2022 came out in November. Patrick, we're already planning the next one. Yes, there's going to be a next one. We're already working on it.
All right.
Can't reveal any details, but we are. We still think there's a big presence of SQL Server. But here's the thing. What we've done is we found out these customers on SQL Server on-premises still want some chip in the game for the cloud. Yep. So we have this product called Arc that gives you monitoring, best practice assessments, inventory, all this kind of stuff you get just by connecting to the cloud, pay as you go billing. So we've kind of introduced that to help bridge those worlds. So that is top of mind right now for me. How do I keep these SQL Server customers connected to the cloud without moving to the cloud? And eventually, maybe they want to move to the cloud. And so we're going to try to help them do that as well. But even think about things like Fabric, Patrick.
Yeah.
Like, how do I connect a SQL Server to Fabric? Well, maybe Arc is going to eventually be that bridge to do that. So that's one thing. The second thing is customers that are making that journey to the cloud, I want them to understand it's not just a migration thing. It's not just lifting and shifting into the cloud and I just sit there and do nothing. It's like how to take advantage of the cloud to do things that are faster, better, more things are going to make you more powerful, right?
Yeah.
So that's the second thing. And then this AI thing, it's not just a thing, Patrick. It's real. It's real technology. And there's two areas right now that I'm focused a lot on. One is generative AI applications. You think about all the ideas of doing chatting with your data, right? Mm-hmm. I'd like to do a generative AI application, but with my data. Mm-hmm. And then I think about this idea of copilots. I think that idea of using technologies of AI companions to help people do things faster and better. I showed some of those things last year at the PAST Summit. Definitely AI is top of mind for me, for sure. And it's something I spend a lot of time on right now.
So if I'm a database administrator, right? I'm a database administrator and I was a database administrator for a long time. And even with Fabric and Power BI and with all the copilots coming out, as a database administrator, should I be worried about my job with all this AI coming out?
I got this question last year at PAST after I did some of those demonstrations. So there's a couple of things that I would say there. Number one, this whole idea of generative AI applications is not about the copilot part. That's more about just building new apps, right?
Yeah.
But you need people that know how to manage that data and make it fast and secure. I mean, that's all a big part of that. So if you don't have that whole basics of performance, scalability, availability to your data, the AI apps are worthless. So admin DBAs still have a big part of that, right? No matter where the data's sitting.
Yep.
Second of all, this copilot thing, and I'm in the heart of working these projects, this is not about replacing a job. This is about helping somebody. Here's a good example. Performance problems, Patrick.
Yep.
They're the most vaguest problems in the world. My server's slow. My database is slow. I mean, wouldn't somebody like to have some assistance to help them go and target what the problem is faster so they can get to the next one or do something else? Like, I don't want to stay up till midnight trying to solve these vague performance problems. Can I do it quicker so that then I can go forth and do more things and more effective? And so the one person I asked me this, I said this, wouldn't you want to be the person that's on the forefront of this and teach the rest of your company how to effectively use this? Why don't you become the copilot expert in your company and make it look to you to see how do we make efficient use of this? But here's the thing, we want to make sure that it's secure.
Wow.
And Microsoft is using responsible AI. So all of a sudden now, I'm an expert now to make sure that this is going to work well with my company and it's not going to violate privacy and security. So I've been trying to encourage people to embrace this as a change because if they do and they stay on the forefront of it, they're going to be ahead of everyone else.
Wow. That's big.
Patrick, I recently told one of my colleagues, Anna Hoffman, we were talking about something. She goes, Bob, how do you, you're just always doing new stuff. I said, Anna, I have a philosophy. Don't just accept change, embrace it.
If
you find yourself with that philosophy, you're going to love working on this stuff because it's going to be new and exciting and innovative. And it's going to really quickly help your career and help you in your current job.
Wow. All right. I've decided to add this new segment into Insights in a Day because I'm the one that's always asking questions, but I never give you a chance to, you know, tell the audience, what do you want them to know about? You know, what's coming out? What are you working on? What do you think? You know, what do you think they should be focusing on right now? So, you know, or just anything, right? If you could talk about anything, if you could tell the audience that's listening anything about data in this new era of AI, you know, what would you tell them?
I think I would say, you know, related to what I just said earlier, you know, it's hard to do your job and stay on top of technology.
Yeah.
So, and like AI is a good example right now, where if you go on, like, say, LinkedIn, you're going to see an article every hour on AI. So one of my recommendations to you is go find some trusted resources that you have to go learn some of these concepts and technologies and make sure that you're doing the right things to stay ahead of this. And then go find out, how could that actually help my company? How could it help my business? Like, be the person that's going to be that new person in your company that says, hey, guys, don't be scared of this. I'm going to help us navigate this for our company so that we can be better and more efficient. Of all the jobs I've had, the managers that love employees the most are the ones, again, that are willing to actually go make recommendations about how to do things more efficiently and how to get better and improve what we're doing. It's hard though. You're doing your job 9 hours a day. Like, how do I do both of these things, right? And I got to admit to you, Patrick, that's one of the things at Microsoft that I've prided myself on. I just don't wait for somebody to say, hey, Bob, go to a training course on something. I find these slices of time to kind of keep myself up to date on what's going on. But there's just so much stuff out
there.
So much. But Patrick, here's the thing. You and myself and Adam Saxton and other people in the industry, people have told us you're trusted resources for us. For me personally, go see what I'm reposting on LinkedIn or I'm posting on X or I'm writing a blog about. Those are things maybe to kind of take a look at and give you guidance. If I was doing Fabric right now, I'd be watching Guy in the Cube to say, what are these guys saying about this stuff? What matters to me most?
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you were talking about the performance, you know, like if I had some AI, I mean, performance problems are a struggle. And I remember when I was a DBA, I started working for this company and we were just having these performance problems. I turned on the trace flag. I don't know if it was 1201 or 12, it was something to do with deadlocks. I turned on this trace flag and it started spitting out all these deadlocks. And I had no idea. It took me 2 weeks to go figure out what was causing these deadlocks. If I had something that could help me, you know, with this, that would have been amazing.
Patrick, imagine that you have a server that somebody says, hey, we just have a slow problem here. And you're like, well, I don't know. Is it high CPU? Is it blocking? Is it deadlocks? Whatever it is. Imagine an AI agent could help you say, look, it's blocking. I'm telling you right now, it's a blocking problem.
Yeah.
And here's the details of the blocking problem. Then you go right to that problem.
Yeah.
You find out the lead blocker. And what if it even could look at some history information to say, well, this has been blocking for an hour. And it has a transaction open and blah, blah. And you go right to the application name, the guy who's ran the query. Like, get to the nut of the problem faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then also be empowered with historical information to figure out how to prevent the future.
Amazing.
I mean, that is super powerful stuff, in my opinion.
That is amazing. Okay. So I don't know about you all that's listening, but every time I know Bob speaking, I like to go and listen, and he blows my mind every time. So why don't you tell people, if you don't mind, Bob, tell people where they can go meet you in person.
Well, same back at you, by the way.
Yeah,
I was at the Power Platform Conference last year, and you and Adam were there, and I've actually loved watching you guys present all the time.
Yeah,
it's one of my dreams, Patrick, for you and I eventually get on stage together and do something. So
let's do it. Let's plan
and
that.
We should.
Okay.
So Patrick, you know, this spring is crazy. I actually didn't have a lot of traveling for events here in the first couple of months, but the spring is just going nuts.
Yeah.
And if I think even just in the entire month of March, it's like talking to developers at Visual Studio Live. I love that event. It's all devs. It's just guys who write code and talk. But guess what? I'm talking about AI and databases, right?
There you go.
I think about, for example, SQL Saturday Austin. I love going to SQL Saturday events. You know, doing that event to talk again about databases, AI, but even talk about nutty SQL engine stuff like availability groups. Going to be at a Gartner event to talk to analysts and to CIOs and ITs. I love that part of my job now where I can talk to deep folks that want to get really into the technology or talk more strategic to folks that are looking at actually decision-making, you know, type processes they're having in their company. And then, of course, some just big time major events, SQL Bits. Gosh, one of my favorite events. Patrick, I think you're going to be there, right?
Yeah, I'll be there with you. Yeah,
in the UK. I mean, I just love going to the UK. Yeah. And that's a great one of the biggest events we have for SQL in the world. So I'll be there doing all sorts of stuff. And then there's this thing, I think it's called the Fabric Conference. So I'll be at that as well. I'll be at the Fabric Conference. Yep. I know you'll be there and I'm excited. First time ever they've had that conference before. It'll be a lot of fun to meet a lot of different people that are looking at data, quite frankly, from so many different aspects. And that conference has not just Fabric, but the databases team, my team, is showing up with a lot of great stuff, talk about AI, and also to talk about our story and how we actually integrate with the Fabric. So, and then past that, it gets crazy. I mean, I've got stuff later this spring. Traditionally, I go to two really big events in the spring, summer, Dell World and HP Discover. Love those events because it's still a lot of customers, Patrick, that are on-premises using Dell and HP technologies, and they want to know, like, where's Microsoft? And so I love going to that one, and I got a lot of great stuff to show there. But yeah. The whole spring's booked, man.
Awesome. Well, Bob, thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your super busy schedule and super busy day. Much appreciated from us here at Insights Tomorrow. And thank you all for listening. And we hope, you know, that you all join us for all future podcasts here at Insights Tomorrow. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Insights Tomorrow. Be sure to catch us next time as we continue the journey to uncover the challenges and the possibilities that organizations face every day. You can find more about the show and catch future episodes at insightstomorrow.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.